I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Herb Alpert's extraordinary career has spanned over 50 years so far as trumpeter, arranger, and composer. He's sold over 70 million albums and earned 9 Grammy Awards. In his role as co-founder of A&M Records, he has also facilitated the careers of countless other stars, establishing one of the premier artist-driven labels. His philanthropy also touches countless lives, including a recent bequest to L.A. City College that fully funds tuition and lessons for music majors. After securing yet another Grammy nomination for his new release, Human Nature, he's on tour with his wife, Grammy-winning vocalist Lonnie Hall. They'll perform at The Shed in Eugene on Friday, January 27th, Herb Alpert joins me from his studios. Thanks for your time today, Herb.
Hey, Eric. Pleasure to be with you. What's the weather like? We've heard some terrible things up there. What's going on?
No longer icy. I was trapped in my house for about 6 days. And finally, it's at that point where 50 feels balmy.
Oh, fabulous. That's like a heat wave, eh?
Well, speaking of 50, the 50th anniversary of your first major success was celebrated this past year with the re-release of about 25 of your best albums. When you listen back to those with that perspective of history, what best stands the test of time for you?
Well, you know, I was doing what I love to do. I'm passionate about making music. I started playing when I was 8 years old. So when I got into the recording and end of it, it was just something that really gave me a lot of, fun to wake up in the morning and go do it. So I do it out of passion. I don't record just to keep my name alive. I love the process.
Your new release, Human Nature, veers into territory closer to electronic dance music than maybe you've previously explored. What made you wish to walk that musical avenue?
I don't know. I'm just open for ideas. You know, I came up through classical music, so I like all sorts of music. You know, it just either touches me or it doesn't. And electronic music has its place, and jazz has its place, and classical. You know, I'm all over the board. I always felt that if it's fun for me to play, it's going to be fun for a certain amount of people to listen to.
Can you quantify at all when you were choosing the songs for Human Nature, what you looked for in the songs you chose to cover from Michael Jackson to Burt Bacharach?
I just look for melodies that touch me. You know, I when I heard Human Nature, and the only one I'm really aware of, well, I think Miles had a recording of it, but it's the Michael Jackson record. The melody sticks, and when I hear a melody I like, I've always tried to like personalize it and see if I can come up with a way of doing it that it hasn't been heard quite that way before, which makes it quite new. There are a lot of artists that take the same arrangements and just duplicate what the original record had. That doesn't interest me. I'm always trying to do something that's creatively different.
One of the things that fascinates me on that record is your cover of Look Up Again, the Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello collaboration, because that too crosses, even in its original form, it crosses a lot of different boundaries there. I love the collaborations that cross age as well as different sort of talents. What did you like about their record together that drew you to it also, besides melody?
Well, Eric, I'll tell you the truth. There was no record. It was a musical that Burt and Elvis wrote, and for some reason that particular song did not make the show. So Bert called me, said he had a tune here that he thought I might like. So I went over to his house and he sat down at the piano and started playing this song for me. I mean, it was amazing because Bert is so passionate about what he does. He was playing this song for me like he was at the Brill Building. You know, he was performing it for me. So, and it was like touching. But the melody's beautiful. Bert's, needless to say, an American treasure, and he writes very unusual songs, and I happen to like it. And I think that's the first recording they've had of that tune.
Could you have ever imagined what it would launch when you first went to Tijuana from L.A. and found a sound down there to fall in love with?
Would I imagine that my career would take off because of it, you mean?
And I think it's had a great impact on other people and the sounds that came out from there as well. So it seems to have launched quite a bit.
It was an amazing experience for me because I never listened to mariachi music, but there was this brass band in the stands. And for about 3 seasons, I went to Tijuana, and I was kind of really excited about bullfights until I decided I don't like bullfights anymore. But anyways, there was this brass band in the stands that they were just playing fanfares. You know, they weren't playing music as much as, you know, they were announcing each individual event. You know, like when the Bull would come out, they'd come with, bang, the Bull would enter, you know. So, and they were playing these different fanfares. And I tried to kind of get a feeling of what that those afternoons were like musically for me. And The Lonely Bull came out. And then, you know, I recorded it. It was written by a friend of mine, Saul Lake. I recorded it and played it for a disc jockey friend of mine. And he said, "Where's the hook?" I said, "What do you mean the hook? This is an instrumental music." He says, "No, man, you need a hook. You need to get something, you know." I said, I don't have that type of bridge that you can sing, buddy." But he's, you know, I thought about it, and I had a friend who was the head engineer at Liberty Records, and he happened to have a tape of 40,000 people screaming "Olé" at a bullfight, which I put right in the front, you know, I put that fanfare on, and then the "Olés," and bang, that was the hook, and that record took off like a rocket ship.
Lonnie Hall's career took off almost at the same time when she was the lead vocalist for Sergio Mendes in Brazil's 66. What do you think you've brought out of each other musically that's made each other better over the years?
You're talking about Lonnie or Brazil 66? Because, you know, I auditioned Brazil 66 with my partner Jerry Moss in 1966, walked into this room and heard this incredible sound. Not only, you know, musically, but, you know, this striking, stunning voice that Lonnie has. And she was the lead singer. We became friends. I produced the first few albums for Sergio. And, you know, I like playing and working with artists that are really doing it for the right reasons. And the right reasons are, you know, not to see how much money they can make or how popular they can become, but people that are doing it because they love the process. And Lonnie's one of those. She's a world-class singer. She won't sing a song unless she really feels it, and it's just you know, beautiful to work with her. And we've been married for 43 years, by the way.
That's at least as much of an accomplishment as anything in music, I would say.
I'm quite proud of that. I mean, it doesn't happen that often in the city that I grew up in.
Well, with such a vast catalog to draw from between you, how do you choose what to focus on in a single evening's concert these days?
Well, we have a lot of songs. We've been playing together with the same group for the last 11 years. Just, it's very transparent. We have drums, keyboards, and bass, and that's it. And Lonnie and I are in front, and we have a lot of songs that we've done over the years, and I try to keep it fresh each night because it's very spontaneous what we do. You know, it's not like cookie cutter music. We're playing songs that change from night to night, and until I'll play a little Tijuana Brass medley that'll have pretty much the sounds that people like and enjoyed over the years, and then Lonnie will do a Brazil 66 medley that's, you know, had the same attitude. But around that is it's very spontaneous and fun for me to do, you know, night after night.
Another case where if it's not fun for you, it wouldn't be fun for the audience. So bringing spontaneity every night seems like an essential element of a concert to me.
Yeah, well, if it wasn't fun for me to do, I wouldn't be doing it, because that's the only reason I'm doing it. I love to play, you know, I love to interact with musicians. And I have this obligation that, you know, I sold a lot of records. You said over 70 million. It's 72 million to be exact. But, you know, I know a certain amount of people would like to hear my music, and I feel like I'd like to share that until I'm not able to do that anymore.
You were so successful in sharing other people's music as well through the founding of A&M Records, which was such a rare beast in being financially successful yet artist-driven. So were there any particular principles that you and Jerry Moss brought to it that made it such a successful vehicle?
Oh, absolutely. I recorded for a major label prior to A&M for about a year and a half, and I was not crazy about the way I was being treated. They treated me like a number. I would go into the recording studios, and it wasn't Herb Alpert. It was like 6858222518-4, take one, you know. So I was nameless, and the studios were very cold, ice cold looking. It was, you know, white on white on white, and I was in the control room listening to a playback one afternoon, and I wanted to hear a little bit more bass. So I went over to the console, and I lifted the bass track, and the engineer actually slapped my hand. He said, "Don't ever touch this again. This is a union board," and blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, man, I'm filing all this stuff. If I ever have a chance to have my own company, I'm going to do it much differently, because this whole game should be centered around the artist. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about music. And, you know, I wanted to make it a very comfortable place to be and a comfortable place for artists to feel like they can, you know, just relax and experience their own artistry.
That business has changed so much in the succeeding decades. If you were a young musician these days, would you approach your career any differently?
Oh, absolutely. It's a whole different world. You know, when I started, I know it's way before your time, Eric, but I had a Webcore, are you sitting? A Webcore wire recorder. This was before tape. And then I had, I had the Ampex tape machine. I had, I had two mono machines. And I was experimenting with this sound that eventually became the Tijuana Brass sound. I'd go from tape machine and overlay the trumpet. And when I hit onto that sound, that was the genesis of the Tijuana Brass sound. But today it's a whole different world. It's a different world of recording. It's a different world of promoting. And, you know, radio is not as friendly as it used to be. So it's a whole different way of doing it.
There's so much that you've done in giving back as well, which seems to me an equal part of your path as much as music and supporting other musicians. Tell me about why you chose L.A. City College to fund students through the music program there.
Well, we're not just funding students, Eric. What we're doing is, you know, there are a lot of kids out there that really would like to have a musical education or an education in general, and they don't have the means. You know, they're financially challenged. So this money that I donated is giving them that opportunity to go to a community college. It's a 2-year college. And if they, you know, put in the proper work, they can transition and take their life to another level. But it's basically to give these kids a chance that don't have the opportunity to go to a UCLA or Harvard or Yale. Or it's not a really sexy donation. It's not the donation that most people that have funds go for, but I felt it was really necessary, and it really the reaction to that donation was unbelievable. People were coming out of the woodwork thanking me for it, and I knew it would have impact, but I didn't think it would be that grand.
Perhaps it has that impact because it's not, as you say, quite as sexy as some other donations that you could have made. So are there other donations that you've done, other work you've done through the Herb Alpert Foundation, of so much that you've given that you've felt have had particular impact?
Oh, yeah. Well, through the years, we've supported lots of different organizations that are involved in the arts. I feel the arts are the way to open up a person's life. It's like a win-win. You know, you get involved in learning how to play an instrument or dance or poetry, whatever it happens to be. You get a good feeling of, maybe you've got something unique to say, and if you do, you might appreciate the other person's uniqueness. I don't know. I love the mystery of art. I think art is a big mystery, whether it's sculpting. You see a sculpture that you like, and you get goosebumps, and you can't really identify why. And you hear a piece of music that touches you, and yeah, it touches you, and you stop your car and you want to get the name of the artist, or you buy that record, and you don't know exactly why you like it. You like the song, yeah, I might like the artist, I like the sound of her or his voice, but to really identify it is that mystery. I love that. And you know, you stand in front of a Jackson Pollock painting and you try to analyze it, you're lost, man. It ain't going to happen. You know, you got to just feel it. The arts are about feel, and that's the thing that's so seductive about it, and that's what keeps me going.
And you've been an artist and sculptor yourself. How does that relate to your music in terms of your creativity and making the soul whole?
Well, I don't know exactly. I approach it pretty much the same way, but when I was traveling around the world in the 60s with the Tijuana Brass, and I'd go to museums and I'd see a painting that was like a black painting with one purple dot in it hanging on a wall at a museum, and then I'd see another painting that had something similar, you know, I'd say, well, I'd like to try doing that. So I got some, you know, I grabbed some paints when I returned home and started moving paint around like a monkey, you know, just kind of putting colors and then moving it around the canvas. And I had fun doing it, and I just kept doing it. It was a challenge. And I had this one painting that I thought was pretty good, and I hung it up on the wall. And the next morning, I was eager to see it, and I walked over to it, and it was like all but gone. You know, I didn't have the technique. I didn't know I had to put some gesso on it to keep the painting from seeping into the canvas, because I watered everything down quite a bit. So it was fun. You know, like once I got the hang of it and I started doing it, it was really pleasurable, and I started sculpting. I got 9 huge sculptures at the Field Museum in Chicago at the moment, and I'm just having a grand old time, like, exploring the arts. And like I say, the real interesting part of it all for me is that it's such a mystery. You know, what makes something fun to listen to, and what is that element? I don't know myself. I don't know when I was running A&M Records, I had no idea what a hit record really sounded like, because it's all personal. I had a chance to pick up this master, and it was 1968 that someone played for me. It was available. We could have picked it up for distribution, but I didn't like the song. I thought it was too long. It was out of tune. I remember the original record that I heard in, I think it was 1958. Anyways, I turned the record down, and it happened to be Louie Louie. And that was number one in the country for like 8 weeks in a row. And every time I heard it, I said to myself, well, I still don't like it, you know. I'm okay with that. That's the way it is. You know, you have to go with your gut.
And you had plenty of successes, so it's not like there's a lot of regret. You need to carry about that one, I'd say.
Yeah, no, I have no regrets about it.
Well, it was tumultuous times in the 60s when your career was launched so well, and tumultuous times again now, and it just seems like music is more important and maybe even more creative than ever in those times.
I think it's crucially important now. I think we're going through a very strange time in our history, not only in this country, but in the world in general. And, man, if we don't get a handle on what to do with the zeros and ones and get some copyright changes for these laws that have to do with digital copyrights, artists are going to drop out of sight, because it's very hard for them to earn a living these days. And it's just not fair, is what happened. You know, the technology has grown so rapidly, and things have changed, that we got to be up to date with the laws that help protect the artist.
Amen. I see so many people coming through this town who are struggling so hard and making such beautiful music despite it all. It's really inspiring and a little disconcerting to me at the same time. So,
well, we got to mobilize. We got to, you know, get together. People have to understand. You know, it's unfortunate. A lot of people grew up with thinking they can just take music for nothing. You know, go to YouTube and all of a sudden you hear those songs that you used to be able to have to pay for, and you can hear them free, or Spotify or all those other, you know, streaming services. It's just not fair to the artists that have spent their life trying to learn a craft and get to that point where they're really doing something special and find that they can't earn a living doing it. It's going to really dig into the world of artistic endeavors.
Which in turn digs into the rest of the world, too, with art being as central as it is.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I really appreciate all you've contributed in this world through your music, through your business, through philanthropy, through the spirit that you bring. And I feel honored to get a chance to spend a few minutes with you this morning. So thanks for taking the time for me today.
Hey, my pleasure. Come see us in concert. You won't regret it, man. It's good. We have a good show. It's fun. It's uplifting. You know, I try to make music that makes people feel good, and I know they leave the theater feeling better than when they arrive. So that's a win for me.
And it's a win for us as well. So thank you again.
Okay, Eric, good luck. Thank you so much.